You're tuned to KDWA, AM 1460, FM 97.7, and this is Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in the studio with me Minnesota Representative for District 54B, Tony Juergens. Representative Juergens, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be back again.
It's good to have you. Busy week in the legislature last week. A lot of omnibus bills, a lot of things moving into
conference committee, yes.
Conference committee, and things are beginning to move through the process to the governor's desk. One of the things that we have been talking about in our sessions here is the unemployment insurance trust fund, which has been depleted because of COVID-19. And you have some news to report on the progress of refunding that trust fund.
Yes, good news there. And you're right. I think we've talked about this every week because nothing was being done. And the way it appeared that that wouldn't actually get resolved until the very end of session. And I was happy this past week things did start to move on that. And the bill did pass and was signed by the governor. But to back up a little bit and remind the users or the listeners what that is, the unemployment trust fund is the fund that unemployment benefits are paid out of. And under normal circumstances, as unemployment claims are made and paid, then there's an experience rating that goes on to the employer. So the more employees that they have that are collecting those benefits or taking advantage of those benefits, then their experience rating goes up and they end up paying more in to replenish that fund or to keep that fund afloat. During COVID, of course, there was it was unprecedented times and the businesses, that many businesses that never would lay people off or were forced to. And the bottom line is that unemployment trust fund was depleted and actually went into the hole by over $1 billion, over $1.5 billion. And when that happens, the federal government steps in and replenishes it for us. And in time, in some instances, they've waived those the repaying of those of that borrowed money. That wasn't the case this time around. And so Minnesota has been paying $50,000 a day in interest to that to the federal government for bailing us out with the unemployment trust fund. Now, there was also plenty of federal dollars that came into the state of Minnesota for COVID relief, and those funds were eligible to be used to repay that fund. Many of us were advocating for that to say that's what that money is for. 30-some states, I think, used their federal money to repay their unemployment trust fund, and we thought that that was a good use of those dollars. We also have a $9.3 or $9.25 billion budget surplus that could also be used as needed. So there were plenty of proposals to fix that unemployment trust fund and get it taken care of, not only pay off the debt, but then also replenish that fund so that money is available for current and future unemployment benefits or those that are filing for unemployment, that money would be in there to pay those benefits. What happened during this past week is we took up the Senate bill that passed 71 days prior to that, back in February. I think it was February 14th, with bipartisan support. I think the vote in the Senate was 55-11 to pass their version of the unemployment trust fund.
So okay.
Pay off the past debt to the federal government and fully fund it so that there's money going forward, and use a combination of the federal funds and general fund dollars to do that. The House leadership chose to sit on that for since February, not wanting to move that forward. And that's what we talked about every week. Mm-hmm. I don't want to come in mm-hmm. and say, well, Mike, nothing's happening. The news is there right. is no news, unfortunately. Right. And so early last week, the House Democrats brought the bill forward. But then they amended it and added a couple of provisions to that bill, which then passed off of the House floor and went to a conference committee. Mm-hmm. And so we were waiting throughout the week to see if that conference committee would take that bill up and refine it. On Friday, we did get that bill back. It wasn't exactly the same as what the Senate had, what was added on in or kept in the bill in conference committee was also the frontline worker pay bill.
Right. Okay.
And another issue that people wanted passed, and we want to get money out to those that worked on the front lines during COVID. I'd been an advocate all along of let's deal with both of them, but they don't, one doesn't need to hold up the other.
Right.
Let's take up one, let's take up the other, but one seemed to be holding up the other one. So on Friday, we did take that bill up, and we did pass that bill, the frontline worker pay portion of the bill. Last year, we did agree, House Republicans and Democrats agreed to spend $250 million for frontline workers. So your EMTs, those that were working on the front lines, those that had to, they're working in childcare, anybody that was mm-hmm. working face to face with members of the public during right. during COVID.
Right.
The list of who would be included in that was fluid yeah. over the summer. The task force met on that and they were not able to come to an agreement. When the session started this year, then the Democrats kind of changed the rules on that and quadrupled it from $250 million up to $1 billion. And that was where we were negotiating, going back and forth. So the bill that was included with the UI Trust Fund had $500 million. So mm-hmm. more than the double what was agreed to last year at $250 million, half as much as what the Democrats were wanting. The end result is about 667,000 Minnesotans will qualify for the frontline worker pay. And it's a bonus, a one-time bonus. It basically says thank you for what sure. you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
We expect that if everybody applies for it, and you will have to apply for it, that the bonus pay will be about $750 per person.
Okay.
That's the estimate if everybody that is eligible to apply does so.
All right. And so at this point, the trust fund has passed. It's on its way to the governor's desk.
It's signed.
It is signed already.
Yep.
Okay.
We got a notice. See, there was kind of a second deadline of April 30th. The deadline that we were working on was March 15th. That
right.
we needed to act by March 15th, or the increase in the payroll tax would go into effect.
Right.
Speaker Hortman was saying, well, yeah, but they don't really need to pay it until April 30th. And so that was the deadline that she was operating on.
Oh, okay.
So the deadline was March 15th. This was moving the goalpost again. But when we passed that, it went right straight to the governor's desk. And I think it was about 10:30 on Friday night when we were still on the House floor debating another bill.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of us got emails or texts that the governor had signed it, so it did go into effect before May 1st.
Okay, and then we also talked with that March 15th deadline that Minnesota's DEED, Department of Ed, Employment and would have a interesting time. Let's call
yeah,
it that,
and we're
refiguring out. So they're starting to do that now?
Yes, and that's why March 15th was the real deadline. Even though the payroll rates for employers throughout the state increased on March 15th.
Right.
Even though they didn't have to actually pay into the fund until April 30th. So now what we were getting, and it was very confusing on Friday because we were trying to get information. People were saying, well, they don't need to pay on April 30th, if they haven't paid yet, there's a lot of clarification that we were seeking from DEED to find out, well, how's this going to work? The way the clarification that we did get was for those that have already paid, that have already paid their payroll taxes, then DEED is going to figure out what overpayment they made and either issue a credit or a refund to them. My guess is it'll probably be a credit.
Right.
Which basically means, your rate stayed the same as what it was before, but you paid more. So now you've got a credit for whatever that difference is. And that's what they'll be figuring out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Back in March when they were testifying in committee, they were practically begging us not to do that because of the mess it's going to cause. And now that's where we are today.
Okay.
Is trying to figure out what, who paid in, how much extra did they pay in? How much credit do they deserve and that sort of thing. So if you have, for any employers that are listening, if you have not paid, and now of course we're into May, but if you had not paid by that April 30th deadline, there are no penalties.
Okay.
To give them an opportunity to figure out what that credit is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't pay now through the month of May, you will not be assessed a penalty from them. So that's where the gray area was, and we were trying to get clarification, but that's the word that we got on Friday.
Okay. And moving on then from that issue, you also, pardon me, you also did some work in the public safety area. There was some, that was a bill that came through talking about increasing penalties for opioid and fentanyl use. Go over that one for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, that language was not in the House public safety bill, and we were trying to amend the bill to get that put in.
Okay.
On Friday, I mentioned the UI Trust Fund bill that we took up, and there was another higher ed omnibus bill, and then we brought up the public safety bill. It was about a 16-hour day on the House floor.
Okay.
Mostly on the House floor, we would recess to caucus a few times. But the final bill that we took up that day was a public safety bill, and a lot of time was spent on one amendment that Representative Paul Novotny had that would put the penalties for fentanyl on par or the same as with heroin.
Right.
Chair Carlos Mariani had an amendment to that amendment that basically it gutted the amendment. It took a lot of the strength away from that amendment. And before we even took the bill up, I asked Representative Mariani if I could have a few words, and we sat in the retiring room. And
mm-hmm.
for anybody that's toured the House, and I've taken you back to the retiring room, and that's where some of this business gets taken care of, where we can sit back there and actually visit one-on-one on an issue or a bill or an amendment. And had a very good, respectful conversation with Chair Mariani. We just didn't agree on the outcome. And unfortunately, he did put that amendment on, and which took all the strength out of the Novotny amendment. So Representative Novotny then just pulled the amendment. So it mm-hmm. didn't even get a vote on it. That was a long conversation, and both Representative Dave Baker and I and others spoke on why that's necessary to put the fentanyl at the same level as heroin. And as your listeners know, that's a big topic of conversation here in the city of Hastings. And what we know and what we want to make sure everybody knows is that when you're dealing with illicit fentanyl, that one pill can kill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point that I was trying to make. The Mariani amendment to the amendment would... They didn't want to, and I understand this, and I don't disagree with it, but they didn't want to target somebody with an addiction,
right,
as a user to all of a sudden have a felony on their record. And that's not what we were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
We agree with that. People with addictions, they need help. They don't need to have a felony on their record that's going to, haunt
the rest of
their life. But as you know, Mike, one pill is all it takes to kill with mm-hmm. fentanyl. And the point I tried to make was, if you find somebody, if the police arrest somebody and they have just one pill in their possession, are they a user? Is that for personal use, or are they going to go sell that pill? Oftentimes, they've met up with somebody, a young person on Snapchat or something like that, and they're going to sell that pill. Well, that's a drug dealer. That's a
mm-hmm.
that's a seller, and that person should have the higher penalties.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if that individual is using that pill or selling that pill, that's enough to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we wanted, that penalty for that reason. And those on the other side of the aisle, we tried to convince them. We did convince two. We had two Democrat votes on against the Mariani amendment, but it did go on the underlying amendment, so then it was just withdrawn.
Okay. So what can we look forward to with that legislation from this point?
Well, it was that language was included in the Senate public safety bill. And so now, as you know, the bills don't match up. There's I'm sure other areas too, other provisions that don't match up. A conference committee will be called, and we're just very hopeful that in that conference committee, the agreement that then will go back to the full House and the full Senate, we just hope that it does have that provision in there, that in that area, in that provision, that the Senate will prevail with their language. And we're hopeful that when it comes back, the bill that will eventually go to the governor. We hope that that language is in there.
Good. That would be a good thing. We'll be keeping a close eye on that. And as we were getting ready for this show, you also had mentioned that you had extended invitations to members of the House to come to the next couple of fentanyl awareness sessions here in Hastings.
Yeah, so last week, Representative Dave Baker from Willmar and Representative Keith Franke from St. Paul Park came with me, and we went to the community event that was at the middle school to mm-hmm. talk about fentanyl and fentanyl awareness. And so when I was meeting with Representative Mariani, I invited him and I said, hey, Tuesday there's another one. I said, I'd love to have you come. So then when I was speaking on the amendment on the House floor, I publicly reiterated my invitation to Representative Mariani and then to the entire House body. I just said, hey, all of you should go to this. Hastings isn't too far from St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'll even drive whoever needs a ride. So my hope is that on Tuesday, it depends on what we have for omnibus bills and if we're still on the floor or not. But my hope is that we will be able to leave there and come to Hastings to take part in that second fentanyl awareness public community meeting, and that I can bring some of my colleagues from both sides of the aisle to Hastings with me to take part in that.
Sure. And then if barring that, there's still the third one coming up later on in May also.
Right. That would work too. Then depending on what the schedule is in the next 2 weeks for either or both of those meetings, it would be great to have legislators there to listen and learn. To listen to the parents like Bridget Noring and mm-hmm. and to listen to law enforcement. And here's the thing that really struck me when I went to the meeting last week. You know, early on when we were hearing about fentanyl, there was a lot of finger pointing. People mm-hmm. would point at the law enforcement and say, you're not doing enough, or the prosecutors aren't, or the judges aren't, or the legislature isn't. And what I've really seen now is that people are coming together, and instead of pointing fingers, realizing that this is a group effort and we all play a part in this.
Right.
And so if we can get more legislators to listen to law enforcement, listen to prosecutors, listen to the parents, the schools, maybe I think that's what it's going to take. This is going to be everybody needs to be involved with the solution to this problem.
All right. And at this point, we have basically run out of time. And what I would like to do very quickly is give you the opportunity to provide your contact information if your constituents have questions or concerns.
Yeah, you can email rep.tony.jurgens@house.mn or call 651-296-3135.
I would like to thank my guest for this community in-depth segment, Minnesota Representative for District 54B, Tony Jurgens. Representative Jurgens, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mike.
You are listening to Community In-Depth on KDWA AM 1460 FM 97.7.